This is Guildcast, episode 45, for September 9th, 2006. Hey everyone, welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host Sean. This week we'll be talking about the Elementalist and some of the great benefits and common misconceptions of this class. There have been a few updates this week that I'll go over, plus a ton of news also. By the time I release this episode, this will have already begun, but this weekend there will be another Double Your Fun weekend. This time they'll provide you with two ways to double your fun. First of all, you'll find that the drop rate for all experience scrolls is doubled. In addition, all experience scrolls, new and previously acquired, will have double the duration time during the weekend event. The fun starts at noon Pacific Daylight Time on Friday and runs through 11:59 Pacific Daylight Time PM on Sunday night. ArenaNet has released something this week that I think is pretty amazing. They took each team member of each battle in the Guild Wars Factions Championship battles, and they made a chart showing exactly what skills each player used and how many times they used it, and how many times those skills actually went through versus being interrupted or canceled. It's one of those things where you really have to be into statistics to follow it, but I think it's pretty amazing to look through these charts if you want to get more into what the big dogs are using for their builds. And I know I mentioned a few shows back about the pre-release pack for Nightfall, but they released some new info on this week. What they say is, the Guild Wars Nightfall pre-release bonus pack, expected to hit store shelves on September 15th, will give fans their first taste of Guild Wars Nightfall with a new retail package that includes a Guild Wars Play Now key for 10 hours or 14-day trial, and that will be for Prophecies and Factions only. They have a Guild Wars Nightfall bonus key, providing one additional character slot for the Guild Wars Nightfall account. That right there is worth it in itself. They have two exclusive items for the new professions, a Fiery Sun Spear of Shelter for the Paragon, and an Icy Soul Breaker of Enchanting for the Dervish. They'll have a mini strategy guide, concept art, screenshots, in-game renders of characters and items, preview trailer, wallpapers, lore, quick reference card, music, and more. This is all just for a pre-release pack. This isn't even for like the collector's edition. This is just a pre-release bonus disc. So, for a description of these new items, the Fiery Sun Spear of Shelter is the iconic weapon of the Order of the Sun Spears and consists of a tempered steel head and a long Mabilla wood shaft, gripped at the midpoint. Behind the head, a flattened sunburst disc increases stability in flight, as does the river horse bristle fletching on the butt of the weapon. Deadly in the hands of a skilled individual, the sun spear was first used as a weapon by the early Order of the Sun Spears in Istin, and remains a traditional weapon of that Alonian province. It does fire damage 14 to 27, requires 9 in spear mastery. It gives plus 5 to energy and plus 7 armor versus physical damage. And then we have the Icy Soul Breaker of Enchanting. It says, this is a lightweight but powerful dervish weapon. Its haft is made of bound iron reed wrapped with bindings made of Alonian leather. Its head is carved from strengthened sky quartz, a shatterproof crystalline mineral mined in southern Istin. The secondary blade at the base of the weapon is also made of sky quartz, and is carved in the traditional Blade of the Five Gods design. Among the dervishes, such weapons are often passed down from mentor to student, and often are as much pieces of art as they are weapons of war. It does cold damage 9 to 41, which requires 9 in Scythe Mastery. It has plus 15% damage while enchanted, and enchantments last 20% longer. So these sound like some pretty good weapons for a pre-order pack. So last weekend we had that Heroes Ascent special event weekend, right? And I actually had more fun than I thought I would. I didn't really get to do too much with it until about Sunday night when I got together with Lysander and his guildies, and his alliance mates also. Then after a few rounds, the Shadowed Blade came along to monk for us also. And I have to say, that group really did it for me. We weren't, like, all these rank 400 uber-elite hacksers or anything. In fact, I think it was pretty much split down the middle between HA noobs and experienced players. Me, of course, being on the HA noob side of that equation. We didn't win halls or anything, but I think the best we did was four consecutives. And it was just the fact that we were able to be so coordinated so well over Vent. And also, since we ran a balanced team that was doing fairly well against the more popular, the flavor-of-the-moment builds, like Vimway and Dual Smite, it really made it all that much better to be winning as much as we did. I ended up getting 58 fame that night, which is roughly 58 times more fame than the one that I had previously. Like I mentioned in the forums about this, I did have fun with that group, and I do realize that the only reason we were able to do that well was because of the fact that we had all of the elements needed, really. We had a good leader, or actually we had two. We had effective communication, we had good healing, and people who listened and wanted to do well. There was no one in the group who thought they didn't have to try as hard because they're so much better than everyone else. Or we didn't have anyone rage quit because they died one time. So when I do HA again, I'm going to have to make sure I do it with a group of friends and not a random pickup group. I know I complain about pugs a lot on this show, but seriously, they're for the loss. Now that's not to say that you might not have luck with randoms, but I don't know what it is. I seem to have the worst luck with pickup groups, especially in higher end groups. It's really weird. It's like I can go to Fort Rannick or Nalani Academy, and I have the other three people in my group try their hardest, and they'll stay in the group the entire time. But when I go to somewhere like Abaddon's Mouth, then I have, like, two people leave after capping their skill. One person's AFK, one person calls everyone else noobs and comments on how great they are, because as a warrior, they're the only ones doing damage. One person stands around asking if anyone wants to buy the gold item that they just got from a chest. You know, you get the idea. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The group makes all the difference in the world. And I see this more and more, especially in PvP, the more I play. So anyway, I wanted to thank Lysander and his guildies and his alliance mates for showing me the ropes of Heroes Ascent. And to think, just the night before, I didn't even know that in the first battle of HA against the Zacian, you can't cross that line that makes the timer start until everyone says go. Yeah, that's how newbie I was. But now, look at me now, I'm almost ranked 2. Yep, I've already contacted War Machine, Idiot Savants, and The Last Pride with my guild application. So now I just sit back and wait for them to fight over me, see who gets me. Because, you know, I'm almost ranked 2 and all. So, we had a lot of discussion about the PvP skill unlock packs in the forum this week. There were several really valid points made on both sides, actually. And I'd still like to hear from more people, though, especially if you've purchased one of these. I'd like to know if you think it was worth it, or if you'll do it again with another class. Or if you bought all the packs for all of the classes, would you buy the faction set when it comes out also? So I'm just curious about that. And as a disclaimer, let me just say that if you admit to purchasing one of these packs, Guildcast cannot be held responsible for the damage done to you by Lady Senea when she finds out. Ah yes, the Elementalist, the first class I ever made in Guild Wars. Of course, I deleted her, as I did with several other classes as I tried them out initially, but the Ellie will always have a special place in my heart as my first. When I recreated an Ellie on my second account, I rediscovered just how much fun this profession really is. Now, while there is the potential to use the Ellie in a very sophisticated build involving glyphs and using just the right elements for your particular mission, say, for example, using water and cold damage against the Titans and the Fire Imps. But I'd say that there are also instances where you can play a dumbed-down version of the Ellie and still be very effective, and that version is the Nuker. I like to call the Nuker the Whammo of the caster world. Okay, wait, don't throw your iPod at me just yet. I love the Nuker, and I respect the high damage that fire magic can do. But it's a build that can be played by just about anyone, even beginners. and it can still be an asset for the team. You can't really say that about every other class. Like, if you're a monk and you're doing a mediocre job, people will notice. If you're a necro minion master and you're letting your minions die or not raising them from every corpse like you should be, people will notice. But if you stand at the back of a group and do nothing else but shoot a 119 damage fireball every once in a while, you'll hear people say stuff like, "Wow, nice nuking." And then there are the classes that you can do the best job ever and you can bring down foes with 3 spells in 2 seconds and no one will ever notice at all. But I digress, since I already did a show on the Mesmer. Elementalists are the classic fireball and lightning bolt spellcasters of the game. Their power lies in their ability to do hefty amounts of damage in a short time. No profession can deal damage as frequently and in as great amounts as the elementalist. Their spells can deal AoE damage or spike damage, and they can cast wards and hexes to hinder foes or protect allies. But this doesn't come without a price. Exhaustion is often an elementalist's worst enemy. The primary elementalist's base armor provides low protection, plus 10 energy and plus 2 energy recovery. An elementalist can choose between plus 10 armor versus elemental and an extra 10 against one type of elemental damage, or armor with no specific protection boost at all. A starting primary elementalist can expect to have 30 maximum energy and 4 energy recovery with their armor. Energy storage is the elementalist's primary attribute, which means it can only be used by a primary elementalist. Because of this, primary elementalists are often paired with another caster class as secondary, like a necromancer, mesmer, or monk, strictly to gain the benefits of energy storage. For each rank of energy storage, your maximum energy increases by 3. Several skills related to gaining health or energy become more effective with a higher energy storage. Through energy storage, elementalists are able to have double or even triple the total energy capacity of other casters. This energy regenerates at the same rate as a mesmer's, necromancer's, ritualist's, or assassin's, which tends to lead to long recharging breaks. Like most primary attributes, having at least a few points in this attribute is highly recommended. This attribute includes an elementalist's only 2 healing skills, which are Aura of Restoration and Ether Renewal. With careful orchestration, an elementalist can maintain an incredible pool of energy. Check out the following example. All players have a base of 20 energy. 16 energy storage is achievable through a superior rune and an energy storage headpiece, which gives an additional 48 energy, a total of 68 so far. Now, if you do a prayer to Lyssa, that will grant you an additional plus 1 to energy storage, which will give you a total of 71. A morale boost of 10% on top of the base total of 71% will give you a total of 78 so far. And then if you do another prayer to Lyssa, this time to grant you an additional 10 energy, that will give you a total of 88. If you have a focus with 12 energy and 15 energy with negative 1 energy regeneration modification, that will give you a total of 115. And then if you have a weapon with plus 5 energy, while health is above 50%, with a plus 15 negative 1 modification, you'll have a total of 135. And finally, if you have armor that adds the 10 energy, you'll have a grand total of 145 energy possible. So the next attribute we have is air magic. Air magic is effective and easy to use in PvP battles. The reason for this popularity can be garnered from the Guild Wars description. Air magic spells deal large amounts of damage to and debilitate a single enemy. Air magic is the best elementalist attribute relating to spike damage. Additionally, some air skills cause knockdowns, blindness, or weakness, all of which are quite useful in PvP. Some PvP teams employ 3 or more elementalists using chain lightning, supported by the condition inflicting skills. Some air magic skills knock down foes, effectively interrupting their actions. Air magic covers a narrow scope, having few skills that directly heal or protect the caster. Several air magic skills can cause exhaustion also. And finally, air magic lacks skills that do damage over time, so protection prayer skills can effectively prevent spike damage, such as Reversal of Fortune, Protective Bond, Spellbreaker, and Protective Spirit. Due to the emphasis on single targets, air magic is far less popular in PvE, where you often must fight many targets at once. And the next attribute we have is fire magic. Many elementalists choose fire magic for its ability to inflict massive amounts of damage to numerous foes. It's also the first school of magic that elementalists are introduced to. Many of the effective air magic and water magic spells don't even appear until more than halfway through the Prophecies campaign. Fire magic is limited in its ability to do anything other than damage opponents, as every skill related to the attribute except the skill Fire Attunement serves a purely offensive role. However, fire magic skills are very effective at what they do, diminishing the health of foes in as many ways as possible. The most basic fire magic skills are the ones that simply do damage to one or more targets, like Flare, Fireball, Inferno, and Flame Burst. These are often used when energy is low. Fire magic has some skills that set fire to the target, like Immolate, Incendiary Bonds, Rodgort's Invocation, and Mind Burn. Also, Mark of Rodgort causes a foe to ignite whenever they are struck with any fire damage. Many fire spells cause AoE, or Area of Effect damage. Firestorm, Lava Font, and Searing Heat all cause damage over time to an area. Meteor and Meteor Shower both deal vast amount of damage and knock down foes. Phoenix is basically a combination of Inferno and Fireball. While other schools of elemental magic offer more intricate ways to destroy your enemies, such as blinding them, weakening them, or slowing them down, fire magic relies on outright damage. An elementalist using fire magic will find that it's easy to run out of energy very quickly. An incredible 4 fire skills cost 25 energy. Those are Mark of Rodgort, Meteor Shower, Rodgort's Invocation, and Searing Heat. In addition, many of the spells cast quickly and cause exhaustion. This means that the fire magic can be his or her own worst enemy, quickly running out of energy and being reduced to normal attacks. However, using skills such as Aether Prodigy or a combo of Elemental Attunement and Fire Attunement can solve any energy loss problems. Now next we have water magic. Though named water magic, this attribute is based mainly on dealing cold damage and implementing ice-based hexes. While its spells may do less damage per hit than fire magic, they usually slow down or hinder their targets in some way at the same time. Water magic spells are also more versatile, and there are quite a few skills that help protect the caster from harm. Spells like Deep Freeze, Frozen Burst, Ice Spikes, and Shard Storm can deal large amounts of damage while simultaneously hexing foes with 66% decreased movement speed. This is useful in many ways. It can be used to keep incoming foes from reaching the caster, or it can keep the targets from fleeing the attack that follows. In addition to typical damage dealing, water magic skills provide a versatile collection of negative effects to throw at the enemy. Water Trident is an extremely useful skill in PvP, as it can knock down moving foes and can be recast shortly thereafter. Maelstrom, on the other hand, interrupts any enemy spells being cast in its area of effect for its duration. Blurred Vision may cause groups of enemies to miss with their attacks. One of the best aspects of water magic is the defensive boost it can give the caster. Swirling Aura helps avoid most projectiles. Armor of Frost and Armor of Mist boost the caster's armor, the latter even increasing his movement speed. Mist Form causes the caster to become invulnerable to attacks, while Ward Against Harm gives party members in the area of effect a good general armor bonus, as well as an additional bonus against fire damage. And finally, we have the final attribute for an elementalist, and that's earth magic. Like water magic, but unlike fire magic and air magic, earth magic has a variety of skills. Earth has more popular defensive skills than the other elemental attributes, and a few powerful spike and AoE spells as well. For protection, Armor of Earth and Kinetic Armor provide the caster a large armor bonus, and Magnetic Aura blocks 75% of melee attacks. Earth magic also possesses four defensive wards: Ward Against Foes, Ward Against Elements, Ward Against Melee, and Ward of Stability. Stone daggers and stoning cause large amounts of damage to a single foe, while Earthquake and Aftershock damage many foes. Aftershock is popular because it deals extra damage to knock down foes. It also requires little energy, and it has a near-instant cast speed. Earth mages can excel against armored targets using Obsidian Flame and Crystal Wave. Crystal Wave hits multiple enemies, but also cures them of all conditions. Obsidian Flame targets only one enemy, and the energy cost, casting time, and recharge time are all very low, but it does cause exhaustion, which makes it difficult to use repeatedly. One method of spiking with Earth magic uses Mesmer as a secondary profession, casting either Echo or Arcane Echo, and then Obsidian Flame. Since the spell has a low recharge time, the caster can use both copies of the spell multiple times in a short period of time, dealing extreme amounts of armor-ignoring damage. This will cause severe exhaustion, putting the caster out of the fight for a little while after that. Earth magic is popular with warrior primaries also because of its bonuses in melee combat, and also because of the area of effect spells that affect enemies around the caster. It's common for hammer warriors to knock down enemies and then cast Aftershock. On GuildWiki, they have a nice little guide for playing an effective elementalist that I'll read just a few little parts from. As an elementalist, you are the artillery, causing massive damage from the rear lines. Just like the assassin, you are not a tank. Elementalists have low armor and few healing or survival skills, and, except for certain situations, should not be in the front lines. Elementalists have the most expensive skills also, but they have the largest energy pool and only a few energy management skills. They have one type of skill unique to the elementalist profession, and that's a glyph, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Elementalists have a unique spell cost called exhaustion. When an elementalist casts a spell that causes exhaustion, the top 10 points of the elementalist's energy pool are grayed out and cannot be used. Exhaustion expires at the rate of 1 point every 3 seconds. And exhaustion stacks, so a second exhaustion spell causes an additional 10 points to be deducted from the caster's energy pool. Elementalists are master spellcasters, calling fire from the heavens, freezing foes in their tracks, blasting enemies with lightning, and crushing them with stone. Stay to the rear of the party and communicate with monks and necromancers for health and energy management. It's usually best to wait for foes to settle on a target, preferably the warriors, before beginning your siege. Target enemy monks and ritualists, as these characters have low armor but are very effective at extending the life of the opposing party. Move on to other casters and warriors from there. It's best to leave rangers for last unless you have armor-ignoring spells, because rangers have higher armor against the elemental attacks that you'll have. Elementalists are most effective if they concentrate on a single element and maximize the effect of that element. Additionally, each element has an attunement spell that refunds 30% of the cost of elemental spells after casting. These attunement spells should be kept active constantly. So there you have it, the basics of the elementalist. If you just keep some key points in mind when playing your Ellie, you'll be fine. Energy storage is great, but like all other energy management attributes, it has its pros and cons. You may think that being an elementalist monk is a great idea because of the energy pool that you have to work with initially, but keep in mind that then you're losing out on the added healing bonus of Divine Favor, which can make a huge difference. And fire magic is great, but try out some of the other elemental magics as well, depending on what you'd like to achieve with your Ellie. And if you're forming a group and you get something other than a fire mage in your party, don't panic and give him the boot right away. It takes some real skill to play a not-so-popular build, and you never know, they might just have that skill. A guildie and listener of the show, a Lucian, says that he plays an elementalist warrior build, and he says he's sick of people kicking him from the party whenever they find out that he's not a nuker. So that's a good example of what I mean. He may have found a great new way to play that combo, you never know. All great builds started from people experimenting.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. One of the biggest things that changed the way elementalists are played, well, probably the biggest thing, is the fact that in November of last year, there was an update which caused monsters to now flee after a couple of seconds when they're hit by damage over time AoEs. This happened sometime after I finished playing through the whole storyline on my Ellie, and I had used Firestorm all through the whole game. Now you can use something else like Meteor Shower, because the meteors will keep the enemy knocked down so they can't really run away. And for quite a while, over the past several months, probably like 10 months, I was using Lava Font, which is a point-blank AoE, and I was using it as a defensive skill. If I had too many monsters around me, I would cast Lava Font, and it would make all of the baddies run away so that I could heal myself. But I was using it just a few weeks ago, and for some reason, the enemies were not running away from it. So what I've started doing is using Firestorm instead as a defensive skill. I made a video of my elementals descending, and I had to look up how to do it, because one, it's been so long since I actually did the mirror battle, and two, which is the main reason, is when I did it, I used Firestorm. And what I did back then was I cast the Firestorm and then ran out of the Firestorm that the mirror cast on me. And then I just spammed with Flare and something else, I think, and that was a really short battle. But because that doesn't work anymore, I had to try something new. What I did was I put all of the attunement skills, like water attunement, air, fire, earth, and also brought two attack skills. I brought Ice Spear and Flare. When I entered the battle, I immediately started attacking and just spammed Ice Spear and Flare. The mirror sat there, wasting time casting the attunements, so that gave me enough of a head start to have a little bit more health than it did. And this made for about a 15-second battle, so the video is pretty short. But yes, yes, it does have the token female elementalist dancing in it. But no, I'm sorry, she's not in her underwear. All of these skills you can get pretty early on, so you can obtain them before you get to the desert. If you want to know where you can get these skills, water attunement. For 36 to 55 seconds, you are attuned to water. You gain 30% of the energy cost of the skill each time you use water magic. It costs 10 energy, has a 2-second cast time, and a 45-second recharge time. You can get it from the quest The Undead Hordes in Beetleton. You can buy it from Sorum in Quarrel Falls, Master Scout Kira in Henge of Denravi, and Dak of Emberlight Camp. Fire attunement. For 36 to 55 seconds, you are attuned to fire. You gain 30% of the energy cost of the skill each time you use fire magic. It costs 10 energy, has a 2-second cast time, and a 45-second recharge time. And you can see that this skill is identical to water attunement, except it's associated with the fire element. You can get it from the quest The Royal Papers in Fisherman's Haven. You can buy it from Bartok in Drachner's Forge, and Dak of Emberlight Camp. I'm not sure if that's complete information on those, because I bet you can get them in Cantha somewhere, too. Air attunement. For 36 to 55 seconds, you're attuned to air. You gain 30% of the energy cost of the skill whenever you use air magic. It costs 10 energy, has a 2-second cast time, and a 45-second recharge time. You can get it from the quest Eye for Prophet in Druid's Overlook, and you can buy it in Prophecies from Teng Sao in Omnoon Oasis, Dak of Emberlight Camp, and in Factions from Mishiko in Kainang Center. Earth attunement. For 36 to 55 seconds, you're attuned to Earth. You gain 30% of the energy cost of the skill each time you use Earth magic. It costs 10 energy, has a 2-second cast time, and a 45-second recharge time. You can get it from the quest The Geomancer's Test in Serenity Temple. You can buy Interia from Captain Osric in Yak's Bend, Dak of Ember Lightcamp, and Incantha from Mashiko in Kainang Center. I bet you can probably get the first two, Water and Fire Attunement, from Kainang as well. I didn't bother putting Elemental Attunement in there, which is an elite skill, because you can't get it in Tyria until you get to Perdition Rock, so that would not be helpful to a Prophecies character trying to ascend. Ice Spear. Send out an Ice Spear, striking target foe for 10 to 58 cold damage if it hits. Ice Spear has half the normal spell range. It has an energy cost of 5, 1 second cast time, and no recharge time. You can get it from the quest to the Deserters in Beacon's Perch, by Interia from First Watch Sergio in Lion's Arch, Dak of Emberlight Camp, or in Factions from Zenaida in Harvest Temple. Flare. Send out a flare that strikes target foe for 20 to 48 fire damage if it hits. It costs 5 energy, has a 1 second cast time, and no recharge time. You can get it from the quest Elementalist Test in Lakeside County, which is in Pre-Searing, and you can buy it from Sir Bertrand in Post-Searing Ascalon City and Dak of Emberlight Camp. And if you're curious, if you're not a primary Elementalist, you can switch your secondary to Ellie later, and you can get Flare from the quest The Elementalist Path, which you get in Hero's Audience. So that's it for me. One last thing that I wanted to mention before I go, though, is it's Sean's birthday on Sunday, and I'm going to be out of town and I might not be home early enough to catch him online that day. So what I'll need for all you guys to do is to whisper happy birthday messages to him. And if you're on Vent, sing happy birthday to him too. I bet he would love that. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the streets.
Hey, this is Solera here, bringing you yet another PvP update. And we're talking about the Ellie this week. And the Ellie, while many people may not see them as much in builds, they are very important in my opinion, whether you be in Alliance battles or Heroes of Ascent or whatever your poison may be as far as PvP goes. But I wanted to focus this time on maybe different couple of builds, one being the Air Spiker and the other being a Warder. And the Warder, in my opinion, is the backbone pretty much of any decent, at least, PvP team. And there's a couple of different versions that you can have of the Warder that have been written down and a lot of people use, which one is the Earthquake Aftershock Warder, which uses Elemental Attunement as the elite, and then Earthquake and Aftershock, and the Earth Magic Wards, Ward Against Melee and Ward Against Foes, along with some other skills. The one that's up on Wiki actually uses a Mesmer with Mantra of Concentration, but I've seen lots of different builds here that use an assassin to go in and cast Ward Against Foes right in the middle of the battle, so all your foes are slowed down right there and they don't attack as fast or whatever, and then they port right back out and that sort of thing. But you can do a lot of things with a ward build. And basically what the wards are meant to do in PvP is just basically hinder your foes a lot. And you can have other people, like your necromancers, buff your allies while you're warding against your foes. And this works very well in balance builds when you do different things to kind of hinder movement, maybe to the altar in Hero's Ascent, or to a control point in Alliance battles, or the flag station. You can buff with wards and make it harder for them to come in. That way you have a little bit of breathing room before they plant their flag, or you can outplant them or whatever in GBGs. And it offers a lot in the way of that. The only problem with that is it usually doesn't have as much damage behind it as it could, in my opinion, because you're buffing most of the time. And with certain builds, you can work around that. You can use, like, maybe Obsidian, the Obsidian Elites or what have you, or, as this build says, Earthquake and Aftershock, and do a little damage and kind of push it there. But the Shockwave is warder as they have here. I don't want to give too much away, as I said before, so I'm using builds that everybody knows about and that I have found online. So that way, it's kind of like I don't want to go and be one, go and observe matches and steal Ellie builds. That'd be kind of cheap. Just go in the high ranking thing and just announce it to everybody as loud as I can. But I'll stay within what I feel is my bounds and still inform people of the builds they do want to hear about. So if I say I got it from here or here, that's why. Because people make their builds, I make my builds, and I encourage you guys to make your builds too. I'm just using tried and true methods that everybody already knows about, and so you don't have to test. And the Shockwave obviously uses Shockwave as the elite, along with your, of course, Earth Attunement, which I believe should be used in all ward builds, but that's maybe just me. And a couple of other, of course, the wards, again, as the name implies, and use Shockwave as the main damager. But again, if you like a lot of action, this is not for you. But if you like to help people a lot, and you want to be the backbone of your team and kind of stay in the back and not really say much, that's what you would do there. Another tried and true build that uses the Ellie as the primary would, of course, be the Air Spiker group. And this group uses, of course, Air Attunement, as usual. And some groups use Elemental Attunement to buff their attributes even a little bit more. Some use Glyph of Energy, kind of as an energy management device. I'll leave that choice, of course, up to you. And they use a Chain of Lightning skills. The normal Lightning Chain would, of course, be Lightning Strike, Enervating Charge, Lightning Orb, Chain Lightning, and Gale for that final boost over the edge. And, of course, when I say Spike Group, as PvP veterans and even some PvP amateurs that are just getting into the game know that when you do a Spike Team, you have to have the exact skill set up as the other team. And what I mean by that is, when you have it set up, you have to have it set up in the same order. So your one has to be the same one as all the rest of the spikers. Why, you may ask? Well, a spike group would, of course, go on TeamSpeak or Ventrilo or some type of voice over IP. And there would be one guy, and he would call the targets like you usually do in a game. And he would count down from 3 and then count down to 1 and then say spike. And depending on the delay, if you're using TeamSpeak or Ventrilo or anything like that, your time delay with your connection depends on when you hit it. But you have to find the time that you have to hit it the exact same moment that the rest of your team does, or else the spike is gone. If somebody spikes too soon or too late, there's going to be problems. If you spike too soon, the monks will notice, oh my gosh, they're going to spike this target, and start focus healing that target. If you spike too late, your damage is going to be mitigated, and really the purpose of the spike is gone. What I've also seen is a spike using fire skills, and while it works, I am not one to suggest it, because as it says in the book, and is still true, fire damage does a lot. And while lightning damage has armor penetration, so it's kind of harder to ward against that, you can ward against fire damage. So people will take that precaution. And since they know that doing something against lightning damage maybe won't have as much of an effect as if they did it for fire, they'll do it for fire so that they have that extra push over the edge, and they may be a little more susceptible to lightning, but they'll be a lot less susceptible to fire, which is a lot more common just because it does that much more damage, and nuking. And another thing, a lot of people say nuking is not maybe as wanted in PvP, and that may be true, but that's hard to say, because let's say you get a group together and you kind of trap them in a valley. You could maybe throw down a meteor shower or kind of hinder their movement with, like, Firestorm. And they have to go around the Firestorm so they don't get damaged. And that could actually add a lot to the strategy of where you're going on the map. Either where you're going or where the enemy is going. So, what you have to think about there is, kind of use your nuking skills, maybe, as a little bit of a different type of ward. And even I've been thinking, maybe have a split build, or this or that, with maybe Firestorm as a ward, as a damaging ward, or Meteor Shower as a ward, or something like that, in a warder build. And that might be kind of interesting to see, and might be kind of fun to play, actually, but I'm not as experienced with playing an LE PvP as of yet. I hope to be soon, because they are a lot of fun, and you can make them in anything you want them to be. So, have fun with energy storage, and have fun with the LE. And I'm excited to see you all at the Skype show. I hope some people that are maybe not regulars, and I'm going to throw it out there to anybody who's not on the forum and maybe just plays the game and listens to the podcast, I'd actually like to see you on the Skype show, because I think that would be a really cool idea. We always hear about the Shadowed Blade or Mr. Monkington or Coogan or whoever from the message boards or from the other shows. Loudness, we try to quiet him, he just won't stay down. So I know Lady Sinea will kind of agree with me on that. We kind of can't get rid of him now. But I'd like to see some new people that are kind of, will get into it maybe a little bit with us, and maybe from that Skype show be kind of pushed to go through maybe a little bit more, and maybe apply to the forums, maybe talk a little more on the show, send in a message every now and again, and hopefully not be the next Loudon, but be as well known. Maybe not for the same reasons, but we'll see. And I hope some people will come out and to the Skype show that I haven't seen before. And I hope to talk to you all then, and I'll see you then. And this is Solera signing off.
For this skills and build segment, I'm going to go over a category of skills that's exclusive to elementalists, and that's the glyph. You may have seen a glyph and thought, what the heck is that? Is it a spell? Is it a skill? I don't know, but it sure is fun to say. Glyph, glyph, glyphy, glyph, glyph. Right? That's fun to say. Now, these are a skill type exclusive to the elementals profession, and there are no skills that affect glyphs. For example, they cannot be removed like enchantments or hexes can. Glyphs have an energy cost of 5 energy. They have an activation time of 1 second. They're not linked to any attribute. They affect only the next spell you complete. They last for 15 seconds if no spell is completed, and they do not stack. So if you cast a second glyph, it replaces the older glyph. There are currently 7 glyphs in all. There's Glyph of Concentration. For 15 seconds, your next spell cannot be interrupted, and it ignores the effects of being dazed. You can buy this in Camp Rancor or Emberlight Camp. Then there's Glyph of Elemental Power. For 15 seconds, your elemental attributes are boosted by 2 for your next spell. You can buy this in Port Sledge, Emberlight Camp, or Xingjie Monastery. Glyph of Energy. For 15 seconds, your next spell costs 20 less energy to cast and does not cause exhaustion. This is an elite glyph, so you can only get it by capturing it from Heil Thunderwing in Mineral Springs. Glyph of Essence. For 15 seconds, your next spell casts instantly, but causes you to lose all energy. You can only buy this in Kanang Center. Glyph of Lesser Energy. For 15 seconds, your next spell costs 15 less energy to cast. You can buy this in Ascalon City, Emberlight Camp, or you can get it from the quests The Elementalist Experiment in Pre-Searing Ascalon, or the quest Skill Chaining in Xingjie Monastery. Then there's Glyph of Renewal. For 15 seconds, your next spell instantly recharges. This is also an elite glyph that you can only capture from Nail Claw Toothin in Perdition Rock. And finally, we have Glyph of Sacrifice. For 15 seconds, your next spell may cast instantly, but it takes an additional 30 seconds to recharge. This can be purchased in Camp Rancor or Ember Light Camp. So, that'll do it for this episode of Guildcast. The Rock, Paper, Scissors tournament is going on now, so if you signed up for them and you haven't played your round yet, contact Princess of Glax in-game and see if he has time to let you take your turn. I made a new video a few days ago showing a quick run through the Alona Reach Minotaurs using the Spirit Bond farming build. You can find that video in the video gallery section off of the main guildcast.com page, and it's also up on YouTube. And remember, next week will be our Skype Q&A show, which we'll be recording on Sunday, September 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be accepting calls right around 8:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to about 9 p.m., but not after that. We'll still have to record the rest of the regular show with reading emails and things like that, so I won't accept calls after 9 p.m. So if you're interested in calling, listen carefully, because this is what you'll have to do. Instead of simply calling me on Skype during this time, what you'll do is you'll select my name and choose to send me a personal message. I believe they call it personal message instead of like instant message. And you'll do this to let me know that you want to join our conversation. Then I'll add you to the group conversation from there. Otherwise, if you try to just call in and I answered, it would kick Sinea and Solero off from the call. So PM me, let me know you're ready, and I'll invite you. If I don't respond to you right away, or you're waiting for a few minutes, don't panic. What I'll do is I'll take the calls in the order that I get them, so your PM will count as kind of like your number in line, and I'll get to you from there. For that reason, I'll be limiting the time for each person at right around 2 minutes or so, with one question per call. If you want to ask another question, you just have to call back. So this should give more people a chance to call in. But the thing is, since this is my first time doing this, I'm not really sure if a ton of people will even participate or if no one will. So I guess we'll see. So hopefully it goes well and we can do another one of these some other time. And please, please, please keep in mind that none of us are supreme experts on Guild Wars. I would consider Lady Sinea the most knowledgeable of us on the game overall, and Solero on PvP-related things, but none of us know everything, so, like, go easy on us. I'll probably write up something more concerning this whole process and more details on this show on the forums. Sometime during this week, I'll write that up if I get the chance. So until then, I wish you all a happy Sean's birthday on Sunday, and remind you to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Hello, this is Lysander Goodfellow. I'm just calling in to say hello to the Guildcast crew and say you're doing a good job. Keep it up.
Hey guys, this is Bristinger-Meister from Texas again. I listened to your last podcast. It was awesome. I was just letting you know that what Sean said before wasn't what was happening. I turned on Ignite Arrows, and I didn't even use Barrage at the time. It was just cutting off at 12 seconds. But I didn't realize that at first, and I actually did use Ignite Arrows with Barrage, and I thought it was being cut short anyways. And then I looked into it, and I just clicked Barrage, and I realized it was Barrage that was messing up, but it was still being cut short for 12 seconds. I don't know if that's still in effect, but keep up the good work, guys. Thanks. Bye. Not too late. The master screams.